Today on This Week in Iowa, the largest county in the state's final preparations for the caucuses. And since we are 1 week away, how are campaigns making the final push? The latest poll shows the race is neck and neck. And we also hear about the Iran missile strike from an Iowan who was there when it happened. Hi, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us here on This Week in Iowa. I'm Sabrina Ahmed, and we start the show this morning with Judy Downs, the executive director of Polk County Democrats. Judy, thank you so much for being here. I know how busy you are.
I am, but thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so tell us, what are the last minute preparations that must happen before the Iowa caucus?
Right now, it's all about training our volunteers. I'm the only staff member in Polk County for the Polk County Democrats. So we have thousands of volunteers who are leading their caucuses, working with campaigns, and working with all of our 177 sites to make sure February 3rd goes smoothly.
So 177 sites. Mm-hmm. What is that like logistically?
It's kind of like planning 177 little weddings, except instead of a bride and a groom, we have a dozen campaigns. But luckily, our community has supported us. Des Moines Public Schools has been a great partner, and a lot of churches and schools are opening up their doors for caucus night.
Well, you're also going to places like the Knapp Center on Drake University's campus. So what is that process like to get these locations to A, agree to allow you to come in, and B, are you paying them for these spaces, or do people donate them?
So one of the things we looked at after 2016, there were a lot of complaints about the sizes. Folks had too many people in their caucus space. We've outgrown some spaces. So this year we looked to find larger spaces, and we kind of had to scour the county. So when we approached Drake about using the Knapp Center, they were very gracious. They're donating a large part of it, and we are paying for some sites. We're spending more money really than we ever have before to make sure that we're in places like the Holiday Inn in Ankeny, where we have a growing population and are expecting almost 250% turnout.
How do you gauge how many people you can expect to come to the caucus? I mean, it's such a niche thing, and it does require an entire evening's commitment.
It does. We're looking very closely at voter registrations. We're looking closely at how many people turned out in the midterm elections and the latest municipal elections, which tunes us in to how many folks are engaged and newly in that community.
Okay, so that being said, where are the largest caucus locations?
The largest caucus locations have always been in Des Moines proper, in Des Moines 62. This is by that south of Grand, Merrill Roosevelt area. That's a really large one. But this year, we're also looking up to Ankeny. Mm-hmm. Ankeny Precinct 2, 1, 2, and 12 are going to be very big. But luckily, we have larger spaces and lots of volunteers.
Define very big.
We're looking at potentially over 700 for caucuses that in the past have had 200 to 300 people.
Now, there have been some big changes in the way caucuses operate this year. There, once you pick your first choice, if that first choice is viable, there's no second round of picking a new candidate. So how are some of those changes going to change the way caucuses operate, of course, other than the rules being different?
All the caucus changes that we've developed are meant to make the caucuses more efficient and more fair. Mm-hmm. So all the changes, when aggregated, should make for a shorter night for folks and some simpler rules. So once you participate in that first alignment and you're viable, you're locked in, and then there's only one more alignment. In the past, that process has kind of gone on and on, but now there's only two alignment periods.
Okay, and so what's your message to people if they're thinking, gosh, I don't know if I've got kids, I've got a dog. I don't know if I can commit my entire evening to this.
First of all, I would say bring your kids, maybe not the dog, but bring your kids, bring a coloring book or a tablet that they can participate, that they can keep themselves busy, or put them to work helping you out and educate them about the process. I brought my son when he was just a few months old to the 2016 caucus, and I'm really glad I did. The second thing I would say is show up early and do your research before about all of the candidates. It's a really fun experience, and it's a privilege that we have as Iowans to be able to participate in the Iowa caucus. Not everyone gets this amount of say in who our nominee is going to be.
Now, I know rough estimates because we haven't seen final numbers yet, but how much is it going to cost for the Polk County Democrats to put on 177 caucus locations this year?
We're looking at more than $20,000 for us to rent all the spaces and get all the materials. That's the really low end right now.
Welcome back, everyone. We are joined now by Kelly Winfrey, who is an Iowa State University professor in journalism, but we're here to talk about how journalism and the media has played into the caucus and will play into the caucus for the next week and day.
Yes.
So, Kelly, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, tell us, what are campaigns doing right now to get that final push? What's the most important thing that they should be doing or can be doing to make sure that they are being heard?
There are a lot of things all happening together.
Right.
Part of that is getting good media coverage and making sure that local programs are covering some of their events and that those events look good on TV, right? That there's people in the rooms, that there's enthusiasm mm-hmm. on camera. And then the other side, which is so unique to Iowa, is a lot of that door knocking, you know, retail politics that Iowa is known for. But both of those things really go hand in hand in a candidate's ability to reach voters.
So do you think that the fact that some of these senators, these four senators, can't be in Iowa campaigning, does that make an impact? Or have people pretty much made up their mind? I mean, they've seen these candidates enough times.
You would think that most people had made up their mind, but the most recent polling still shows there are a lot of people who are uncommitted or unwilling to really commit
right.
yet. There were still a lot of people who were willing to be persuaded even though they had a first choice. So there's still a lot of movement possible, and I think that having those senators not here definitely hurts them. I think they're gonna be here every second they can be that they're not in the impeachment hearings.
Right.
And they have a lot of surrogates here. So a lot of other people here campaigning for them, trying to make their case to voters.
Like the biggest names that who have endorsed these candidates are coming to Iowa.
Yes. Yes.
Hands down.
Yes. Everybody's here.
So how does the media look to cover these candidates? Because, of course, we are the media, but I mean national media. As they're descending upon Iowa, not only is it filled with campaigns and candidates, but it's filled with national and international media. What is their goal?
You know, I think for national and international media, it's trying to understand what happens in Iowa, because the caucus process is very foreign to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's not something that most voters experience. So understanding what the process is and how Iowans go about making those decisions is what they're trying to figure out. And then ultimately, who's going to win, which
so,
we don't know.
So is it more about the Iowans and more about the storylines behind Iowans picking candidates and less about the candidates themselves right now?
You know, I think for the media watching outside, everyone's waiting to see what Iowa's going to do. And so a lot of that is on Iowa voters.
Right.
And so in a lot of ways, the story is, what are the Iowa voters thinking? And, you know, what do they think of the candidates and why? But what are they going to do? Because doing well or doing poorly can make or break a campaign.
Absolutely. So I asked Patty Judge this as well. What do you think a successful Iowa caucus looks like for a campaign?
Oh, it's rough.
you know, this allow me to put the most daunting yeah. questions that exist in the world on you.
You know, I think in Iowa, a good ground game is really important. So knocking on doors, having volunteers in all precincts is a really big part of making caucus night successful. But before that is candidates talking to voters. You know, Iowans expect to meet candidates. I moved here from Kansas City 6 years ago and was shocked that people thought they should meet all the candidates multiple times. And so that's an important part of a campaign, is being here on the ground, talking to people and connecting with people. And I think really trying to make the case for why they're the person who can best represent Iowans, but also can win in a general election.
We have like 30 seconds left, but I'm gonna ask you another really tough question. What does a contested convention look like?
I mean, we could have three candidates that all have a lot of delegates, but not enough to win. I think that could easily be Biden and Sanders and possibly Warren, too. I don't think that it will go to that,
okay.
But it's certainly possible.
The most recent Iowa poll of likely Democratic caucus goers shows a pretty consistent top five in the race to the White House. Biden still on top. This is a look at the results following the CNN Des Moines Register debate that happened in our state last week. Aside from these five candidates, no other candidate received more than 4%. Now, joining us now is Patty Judge with Focus on Rural America, who authored the poll. Thank you so much for being with
us. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, first of all, if you could please tell us what surprised you about the poll.
We, as you said, Sabrina, we went in the field with this poll right after the mm-hmm. last debate, and So there was, as you remember, maybe a little bit of a dust up at the very end between Senator Warren and Senator Sanders, I think that the results of that poll show that that might have had a little effect on the numbers for those two people.
With Joe Biden at the top, he was also at the top when you started this poll,
right,
many quarters ago.
Yes.
Did it surprise you to see him back up there?
I think one of the things that's interesting about Biden and this poll is that, as you said, he is now 2 weeks from the actual caucus event, exactly the same place he was the first time we polled him after he entered the race. So that shows that he has held his people, his base, but it also shows that he really has not picked up a lot of new voters.
What does it say about candidates like Pete Buttigieg, who barely registered on your first poll?
Right.
Now
uh-huh.
the final poll that Focus on Rural America has put on before the caucus, he is right there in the top five. I mean, in the thick of it all.
Well, I mean, that's what Iowa is about. That's what we're for. We have known commodities in this race this time in Biden and Sanders, but we also have a newcomer, a new face, and Pete Buttigieg has appealed to a lot of people in Iowa. He has put together a tremendous campaign, and as we go down to the stretch, he is certainly one of the people that are going to be going out of Iowa with some steam.
What do you think it takes? You've been in Iowa politics for a long time. What do you think it takes to be successful out of the Iowa caucus? Obviously, you don't have to win, but do you have to be in the top three to consider a success? Or when there are this many candidates, do you just need to have someone support you?
It's really funny because I just had this conversation this morning with some folks. What does it mean when you win? Is that the person that comes out of this with the most people? Because for the first time in ever, the Democratic Party is going to release those raw numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So we will know exactly how many thousand people stood up and pledged for Biden, pledged for Warren, so forth and so on. Is that what win means? Is it how many delegates you're going to be taking into convention? Is that the win? Or is it both? I don't know. But I think there are more than three tickets out this time. I think there's at least four and maybe five. The top five people have an opportunity to go out of Iowa, go to New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and so forth, and continue the momentum.
Does it concern you that there are these different types of numbers that will be released? Do you think that it will change the headlines and change the way that the Iowa caucus is perceived?
Well, I hope people understand that this is a caucus. This is not a primary. It is not necessarily how many votes you have, because we really don't vote. We're not voting. We're having a caucus. We are pledging our support to a candidate. And that's a very different thing. The first primary will be in New Hampshire.
Right.
But people have wanted to see these raw numbers, and in the interest of being transparent and making certain that everybody understands exactly what we're doing, and that we are not trying to favor one candidate over another, those numbers will be released for the first time. And listening to Judy Downs, you know, if we have the crowds that they are anticipating,
right.
Oh boy, I'm glad I'm not on the counting end.
You and me both.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for
Thanks
your time.
So much.
We really
Great
appreciate
to have
you being here. We're joined now by State Senator Zach Nunn from Bondurant, who also is a member of the Air Force. So you were deployed, and you just got home like a week ago.
Yep,
Welcome
Sabrina.
Home.
Well, hey, thank you very much, and congratulations. An exciting arrival for many of us in the
you.
Near future.
Thank
like.
You very much.
This is excellent.
So I said you were on the ground when the Iran missile strike happened, but allow me to rephrase. You were technically 30,000 feet above.
You, with the Air Force guys, exactly. The Marines and the Army are the ones who are doing the hard work at the embassy. What we do with the Iowa Air National Guard is I forward deployed with the 24th Expeditionary Reconnaissance Squadron and served as the acting commander. And in that role, we take both active duty and Guard and Reserve members, put them on our aircraft as a reconnaissance aircraft. It's called an RC-135 code term rivet joint. and we fly reconnaissance or overwatch for an area. We've been looking at areas both in Eastern Europe and Central states for quite some time, particularly after events that happened just after Christmas where a U.S. citizen was killed at a base backed by Shia militia that were supported by the Iranian government. We were monitoring what was happening and as a result had a very close view of what was happening in the field.
So, of course, there are so many things that happened that we could talk about for the technicalities, but I want to talk about what it was like to be there in the thick of it, having to respond when you didn't have any idea what could happen next.
Right. So I will say in total that I'd already been in country for 90 days forward deployed. We had roughly that last week as the commander sending young airmen, many who are in the ages of 20 to 30 forward to actually help observe. And then obviously we had a direction that came from the DOD down, directed by the commander-in-chief, that there was going to be an immediate strike.
Right.
Our aircraft provides kind of that intelligence and overwatch for it. And so we were looking at not just a singular event, but what was going to be the reaction for the entire region.
Absolutely.
And so from a strategic intelligence concern, one strike against a very bad man at the arrivals lane at Baghdad International Airport could have easily boiled over into a very large regional conflict.
Absolutely.
So I think the biggest thing that we were concerned about was, one, the safety of American lives, and we were in response to missile strikes that came out of Iran, hit U.S. facilities in Iraq, and thank God no one was seriously injured in those events. And most importantly, then following up to make sure that clear channels of communication were being validated by what was happening diplomatically with actual events on the ground. And so it was escalating in the lead up, but it was also very vindicating to see the intelligence we were providing was showing there was an actual de-escalation happening within Iran and that we were not going to overstep our bounds. And the Iranians were certainly not going to escalate to a point that would have led to a larger conflict.
When you say larger conflict, I mean, there was potential for a war to happen.
Certainly.
And there are 200 Iowans at any given moment who are there serving. I mean, our state's not that big.
Iowa has had a proud tradition of sending its citizen soldiers in the Army National Guard, the Air National Guard, and a number of our reserve components, both in the Navy and the Marines, forward to locations some of the most dangerous in the world, many of them serving in places like Iraq and Afghanistan today. And as you highlight, it's Iowans who have answered the call. Since the time of the Civil War, Iowa sent more soldiers forward than any other state in the Union as a percentage of our population.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And we hold true to that today. It's exciting. It's also a huge responsibility that I think our state's on the forefront of leading.
What is your message to those who are sitting at home who don't grasp the full concept of what happened, but they just know that you were there?
Well, I mean, I'll say, actually, the most humbling part of this is serving with men and women who have decided to make this their calling. They hang up their, in my case, state legislator suit, and they put on a flight suit, and they go fly a mission. But equally humbling is coming back home to a family who has been waiting for you to return after 100 days, who doesn't get the validity of knowing what's happening in a world. And most importantly, just the friends and neighbors in your community, the guys who are out there, my neighbor shoveling my driveway, because I get off a plane, fly a mission in a foreign combat theater, and then come back, and the next day I'm dad to some great kids again.
Four kids.
Four great
one,
kids.
1 year old in the mix of all that.
And an amazing wife who is doing it all. But also a community that's there that says, hey, we don't get the reconstitution like the active duty guys get. We're back on being civilians. Day number two.
Well, thank you so much for your
Sabrina,
service,
thanks, right?
And thank you for sharing just a small part of your story with us.
Congratulations.
Thank you. A quick personal note before we go. This is my final week hosting This Week in Iowa for a few months. I'll be taking some time off as we are expecting twins at just about any moment. So Jack Miller and Stephanie Engelson will be taking over for me while I'm gone. I am very thankful for both of them. They'll be tag teaming the show, and I will be back end of April, early May. We'll, of course, see how things go. So thank you so much for joining us here on This Week in Iowa. Next week's show is the day before the caucus, so it is one that you will not want to miss. We appreciate you. Don't forget that you can always listen to us on the go with our podcast. We hope you have a great weekend, and we'll see you in a couple months.
Thank Thank you for listening to the This Week in Iowa podcast. You can find the This Week in Iowa podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, so be sure to subscribe now. You can also watch This Week in Iowa every Sunday at 9 a.m. on Local 5. For the latest in Iowa political news, follow This Week in Iowa on Twitter or visit weareiowa.com.